let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen and guest host Eric, proudly brought to you this February thanks to the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz, and check us out on Spotify. Tonight in the studio, we are celebrating Auckland theatres at its best with Pretty Legal, Shark in a Boat, and Oleana, all in the studio tonight. Later, we check in with Emma in America, and you will hear how much she loved the show The Outsiders. So to kick off the show tonight, here is the track from the show called Stay Gold.
Turns out I was wrong. It might sound crazy, but hear me out. It may take me to the grave, but I know what your poem's about. I have seen a pool of blood run crimson red, and I've seen the sunrise coming overhead. Finding beauty in the fall is the only way to keep from growing old. My friend, stay gold. When you're young and the world is new, to forget when you're trying just to make it through. Like the morning light and the dawn it brings, you see the world finding beauty in the simple things. I have looked into a thankful father's eyes, saved his daughter's life. I'd do it all again, cause I found beauty in the fall. My friend, stay gold. Looking back at the life I've had, good, cause I made my peace with all the bad. 16 years, look at all we've done. Wouldn't trade it for the world. Can't you see that we're the lucky ones?
Of time to make yourself what you want, Pony Boy. There's still a whole lot of good in the world. Tell Dally. I don't think he knows.
Finding beauty in the fall, it's the only way to keep from growing old. My friend, stay gold. Friend, stay gold.
Shea Gold. From The Outsiders, a new Broadway musical, Emma will catch us up a little later in the show, all about that one. Eric, welcome to Emma's seat.
Hello.
How are you? Haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Good to be back. Nice to have you here. She's jet-setting once again. We've both got lots of travels this year, so get used to coming in. Between you and Taylor will be a few slots over the years. Nice to have you here.
Yeah.
Seen any shows since we last caught up?
No.
It's a now hitting though. Everywhere we look, and our inbox is chocker with so many festivals throughout the country over the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks. It's incredible. So sorry, we've turned a lot of people away from Kick Arts. Headed down to Christchurch yesterday and caught some of the World Buskers Festival, which we've had guests on for the last few weeks. Great to see that in action. The city was alive, pumping. Man, it was hot down there yesterday. It was like 25 degrees and it was a gorgeous day. And the buskers were doing their things. The crowds were out. So well done to all the organisers of that festival. Now, I have a very full and rather noisy studio tonight. Wish us luck, listeners. Faith is in the house. Welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me back. This is my third time here.
Third time here.
Yeah.
Welcome back. And this time here with the team from Pretty Legal.
Yeah.
So who did you bring along?
So I brought along... Do you want to introduce yourselves? Go on.
Sure. Hi, I'm Casey.
And hi there, I'm Liam.
Great to have you both here. Welcome to the show. And from Pretty Legal, which is on at the Pump House, through to Jeff Allen at Pitt Street Theatre and the Rose Centre, I believe, doing the double bill. Shark in a Boat. Welcome, Jeff. Great to have you back.
Kia ora. Thanks very much. My first time at Kick Arts.
Yeah, I think last time was on a Zoom during COVID, so it's lovely to have you here. And who's this fabulous person you've brought back into our studio?
Oh, stop it now. Joseph Wyckoff, and I am one of the cast for Shark in a Boat.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say they're in my cast, yeah. So it's
all
just
good.
Me and my cast, yeah.
All good. All right, we're going to kick off with Shark in a Boat. Tell us, Jeff, what is this all about?
I've created the worst fishing trip you could ever go on, basically, and put it on stage. And I thought I was kind of moving out of writing shows. And then I heard Quentin Tarantino talk about Jaws as being, he thought, one of the great movies ever made. And then I heard of a play in London in the West End. Robert Shaw's son, Ian, had written a show called The Shark is Broken, which is what happened backstage or when they weren't shooting on Jaws. And I thought about getting the rights to that, but it was going to take a long time. So I thought, well, what the hell? I'll write a New Zealand play about a fishing trip where everything you could think of goes wrong. And decided to call it Shark in a Boat, which my fishing expert tells me does actually happen.
Yeah, well, there's some wonderful TikToks and YouTube clips of exactly that happening. And what made you suddenly decide to write again?
I think being the manager at Pitt Street, a lot of young theatre groups come through, like Stray Theatre Company, which are the university group, and they were so enthusiastic, and they weren't jaded, you know, like us old thespians. They had this enthusiasm and love for it, and it just invigorated me again.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I think that's important. And Joseph, who do you play?
I play New Zealand Firefighter of the Year, John De Silva.
Ooh, tell us about John.
John goes on a 3-day pleasure fishing tour, primarily to get away from some troubles at home. Ooh. And I'm very much a cinephile, and this fit nicely into a whole group of films that I enjoy, which is drama on boats. You've got your Dead Calm and Knife in the Water and Poseidon Adventure, and I could go on and on. But it really is just a tight and shiny, you know, just over an hour of everything that could possibly go wrong does.
Oh, I love it.
To the enjoyment of everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you said New Zealand Firefighter of the Year. Is this like calendar stuff? You know? Yeah, yeah. I'm getting the nod.
Conceptually, yes, but thankfully during the show, no.
Could be a fundraiser while you're there. Yeah. You could have the fireman's calendar, you know, fundraise for them.
Calendar girls. That's
brilliant. On sale in the lobby.
Love it. And this one, you're setting up at Pitt Street and then later on moving to the Rose Centre.
Yes, because I work at and run two different theatres, one on Pitt Street and the Rose Centre, I've always had this dream of doing a city to shore thing or making that, you know, because people have this, they always, it's tedious that people talk about the bridge as being some kind of barrier. It's just more road. You know, if there was land there rather than a harbour, it's just more road.
Yeah.
But like, oh, we never go over to the shore, it's too hard. So I'm starting at Pitt Street, then coming over to the Rose for 4 nights. And the Rose has been really supportive. They help with the graphic design and so on. And they're wanting to do more innovative stuff there at the Rose as well. And Pitt Street's just, it's just got a vibe. I mean, you've done stuff at Pitt Street.
It is. What I loved about Pitt Street, which actually surprised me because I wasn't expecting it. You know, when you're doing theatre, and actually, Eric, you were in the show at the time, and we have a young cast, and you kind of know who's coming to support who, and they come along. I didn't know half our audience, and every person I questioned, they were like, oh no, we just live up on K Road, or we live here, we always support what's on. It's got such local support. People that don't have cars, that just love walking to their local theatre. And it was like this untapped audience that we haven't had before. It was so cool. It was awesome.
Yeah, we had a transgender play on years ago, and we had drag queens, the local drag queens, did the box office.
Brilliant.
So that's what I love about the Pitt Street K Roads thing. You're right in it there.
I bet you'll love it even more when all the roadworks and train stations and things are finished outside. Yeah.
Don't get me started.
It's getting closer. It's getting closer.
Any minute now.
Brilliant. All right. So jumping to you, Faith, tell us a little bit about what is Pretty Legal.
Oh, funny that you mentioned the K Road crowd, because I feel like that's more our audience than the North Shore retirees.
You need to hire the Pitt Street Theatre.
True, because I mean, I've written, it's probably my fourth play that I've written, and it's definitely the most of our time kind of thing, because usually I write stuff that's set in the past, it's not really relevant to today's audience, but I think that this one is definitely a first for me, because it takes place during an event that didn't occur too long ago. It's the passing of the marriage equality bill. But the thing is, that's not, you know, that's not all the play is about. It's kind of the backdrop that it's set against. And it's kind of, it's about, so two law firm colleagues who were in lavender marriages. So they leave their husbands for each other and their husbands do the same. So it's kind of like they had a little pact, like, you know, you leave your husband, I'll leave mine. We get together, the husbands get together. Nice little love square kind of thing. And the moral of the story is all is not well, even though it's pretty legal, because the bill could change, the law could change. Even though it is legal, people's attitudes still haven't changed, because people would still say, oh, that's so gay. Oh, oh, I'm not comfortable with that. Because there's a character in the play who's the son of one of the couples, and he's got that whole toxic masculinity thing, because he's quite insecure about his dad's being gay. And that just shows that even though they can legally marry each other, you know, people's attitudes are still stuck in the past, and that doesn't mean that all is well. You know, well, I said a lot. We'll see if he's sticking it a word in.
I can't believe that you've written another one, because it feels like you're just turning them out
twice,
so fast.
Yeah.
Do you just live in the writing room?
I feel like I do. Yes, I do.
And are you directing this one as well?
I am. Yeah, my last play I did not direct. My first play I did direct. I think I've definitely grown as a director and writer now.
Because we've had interesting conversations with you before with your cast, and you know, I can turn her mic off at any time, Tim, around that whole thing of writing it, but being in the room with someone else directing your work when it's sort of its debut. You're directing your one as well, Jeff?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So I guess, is that a kind of, almost safety net's not the right word, but is it kind of like, I want to bring my vision to life for its first showing?
I think it's, for me, I see myself as a writer-director. Well, yeah, I was a writer first, and then I started directing after I started writing. For me, it's a lovely, and before that I was a painter, an artist, went to Elam and stuff like that. So for me, it's just an extension of being the creator who creates something and then puts it on the wall. And if you are able to detach yourself and be open and work with the other, like the cast that I have, like on Saturday, everyone was inputting, and everyone was saying, can we add this, can we cut this? So when you have that, there's not a problem. It's just a different kind of thing from being, I have had another a director direct something, like Amanda Rees did Sister Anzac and did an amazing job, and they take it to another dimension. they take it to another dimension. And it's just two different ways of approaching theatre.
Yeah, interesting. Faith, do you let your cast...
No, suggest- it's a dictatorship. Well, I mean, sometimes if they're good ideas, yes, but if I don't like them, no. So it's very... I think that's something that I did have to learn, because with my first play, I did at some point have kind of a yes-man mindset, then I had to turn it off, and I was like, look, it's my play. If I do like what you suggest, I'll take it on board, but if I don't, I won't. Yeah, it's very simple. Yeah.
All right. Let's chat to the cast now. So,
say nice
things. Casey, tell us a little bit about your character. Who's your character? And
yeah, okay, so my character is called Katrina.
You said it right.
I did say it right.
People were saying, we're adding an extra letter in there, and it sounded like something really rude, but yeah.
Yes, some people pronounce it slightly differently. So she is a divorce attorney, and she's in the law firm with Olivia, and they are now a couple. And she is of the group, the gang of four. She's very witty and sort of, you know, glib and off the cuff and all of that stuff. So she's
like
a very she's a very fun character to play. Yeah.
Cool. And is this your first time working with Faith?
It's my first time being directed by me. Yeah, acting for Faith. It's my first time acting for Faith, but we've like done short films together. Oh, she was a little extra. Well, you're an extra in my short.
Yeah, I did it at the last minute. I was like, sure, why not?
Yeah, she came and sat at a table. Yeah. So yeah, we know each other because very randomly I was selling some vintage clothes.
And I was getting some for my show at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Faith turned up at my house and she was going through my pile of clothes, and then we were talking away and she said, oh, I'm a writer. And I said, oh, I'm a writer and actor and da-da. And I said, oh, do you ever write for the middle-aged lady? She said, well, funny, but I actually, like, that's what I love to do.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, I'm going to see a play, my brother's wife's nephew's in it. Tenuous. And she said, oh, what's that one? And it was her play.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I've been looking for, like, the wardrobe for my play. Yeah.
So that was how we met.
Yeah.
And now, so we've formed this nice little symbiotic relationship, which is great.
Love it. All right. Liam, who do you play in this mix?
in this lovely bundle, I play Simon Blair. And it's a really, really cool little dynamic we got going, because Simon is actually a struggling actor himself. So very, very similar experience there. But he is the ex-husband to Olivia, and Olivia's quite a regimented sort of person. And so he's very much appeasing in his sense of how he still has his interactions with Olivia, but is very, very much dedicated to his new fiancée, Barry. And these sort of personality traits tend to blend a little bit together, but it's honestly such a lovely dynamic to get to put across on a stage. It's something that I've never seen put across before, and it's a joy to be part of, to be honest.
That's cool. Poor Eric, we've swapped seats around tonight to fit everybody in, and my co-host is behind me, so I can't even make eye contact to see if you're trying to
just interrupt.
I'm listening and nodding. I'm liking what I'm hearing.
Brilliant. Jeff, you know, you're no stranger to theatre. You've grown up, lived it, breathed it, made it multiple times. What is it that's keeping this passion going and going for you?
It was the reason why I left art school, I think. At that time, I wasn't getting on with the tutors like Don Binney or Rob Ellis.
Ooh, drop the names.
And so I went into photography with John Turner, which was really, really exciting there. But then I found myself in a dark room by myself. And I realized I was doing theatre at the time. That was the conflict with art school. That I wanted to be really working in a collaborative way with a group of people. And that was what really turned me on, you know. And that was theatre. So I left, and also the theatrical parties were way better than the art school parties. Actors really know how to party. Yeah. Or they used to.
They used to.
Do they still?
We still do, yeah. We do, yeah.
We do. So it was that working collaboratively and the immediacy of writing something and being able to put it on. You know, it's like I would hire a cafe when I was an artist, like Just Desserts. I don't know if you remember Just Desserts back in the day.
Yes.
exhibited there.
Right.
And you paint, you arrange, you put it on the wall, you sell a few, that's it, you get it out. Mm. And with theatre, you can do that if you can write it, hire a space, get some people together, and you put it on so you complete the whole process. And that's really important for an artist, to have that beginning, middle, and that end. A novelist, and you may write a great novel, but you might not be able to get that published.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And Pitt Street Theatre, what made you sort of get involved into that, to set that up as such a cool space? What triggered that one?
Well, it was you and me doing Pardon Me, Alan Turing.
Don't lay this on me. This was all you're doing.
I was playing Oscar Wilde and he was playing Alan Turing.
In Stephen Lunt's Pardon Me, Alan Turing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we were at Samoa House, which was as hot as hell.
Yes.
And I stepped out of that and I thought, right, the next show I'm going to do, I want somewhere cooler. I looked along Beresford Square and there was Pitt Street standing up there. And I thought, oh, they've got a hall. So I went over there and Reverend Lynn Frith was there in the office and I went in and she said, oh, hi, I'm Jeff. You may have heard of me. And she said, oh, yes, I have. You're the theatre person, aren't you? Would you like to start a theatre here?
Oh, brilliant.
It was the first thing that she said. And I said, yes, please. Wow. Because that's the dream as a young. Mm. At your age, we were always going to old theatres and they were up for sale and going, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could hire it? Mm. Or so we got, so the church was great. They gave us $23,000 to get some lighting, $12,000 for some heat pumps. They've been incredibly supportive.
That's awesome.
And it's now, and at the same time, the venue we used to use at the Maidment, the Little Maidment, that got knocked down. So between Kew and Garnet Station, Pitt Street provides a sort of like, for independent companies, a decent-sized theatre that isn't too big, where if you get 30, 40 people, you've got an audience.
And it's affordable to take a risk. Because that's one of the problems, producing theatre. I know when I'm producing, I've got to weigh up that theatre size, take a risk, is it a title that people are going to come to, etc. And, Pitt Street's so accommodating. Yeah, awesome.
I'll keep that in my back pocket.
Yes, that's your next venue. Joseph, when did the theatre world kick off for you?
Oh, God. I did my first professional show when I was 17, which was when God was a boy. I knew that I would either be a good actor that worked a decent amount or a bad actor that waited a lot of tables. And fortunately, I did more acting than I did waiting tables. And so I was a professional actor in the States, mostly based in Chicago for 30-some years. And then eventually in 2013, I moved to Auckland. And basically, at that point, it was... all art is local, and so you walk in and go, okay, how do we make art here? Who do I need to talk to, and what do I need to bring? And Jeff was one of the first people that I met in doing that, and it was wonderful sort of figuring out, okay, how does it get done here? and it's been a lovely journey growing within that community. Coming from a community that I love very much and miss from time to time. 30 years, you do a lot of things. And occasionally I still go back and do things there. But here it's just a little different flavor, and that's delightful. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful spot. All right, we're going to take a short music break and then we'll continue to catch up on their stories. Now, the lovely team from Little Sister Music have shared some latest tracks from Kiwi artists to be released. Daily J has shared their new indie rock single, Cheap Tequila Sunrise, and here it is first on Kick Arts, just released on Friday.
Remind
Daily J. Cheap Tequila Sunrise. Thank you, Little Sister Music, for sharing some fabulous Kiwi tracks with us this week. We'll get a few more done tonight, but we've got a very full house. So back to our fabulous guests. And Liam, I'm curious, what's been your arts journey? When did it all kick off for you?
Oh, well, it's interesting. It's been about a 15-year journey thus far, and it started in North Canterbury, then eventually evolved to Wellington, and now it's rounded its way up to Auckland. So it's been an interesting time, and it's been predominantly film, actually, but it's been a very, very refreshing surprise jumping into some theatre, which is very, very cool.
What made you make that switch?
I did.
I turned her mic on just in time. I could feel it coming.
You could sense it. Yes. There's an aura. No, it was very, very cool, actually, because most of my experience has been in film, and we were actually working on a film together recently.
All of us were in the film.
And
yes,
Faith comes barreling up at the screening, and she's like, "Hey, what are your thoughts on theatre? Do you like theatre?" I was like, "Yeah, I love theatre." It was KC.
You told me. I told you. Then we both did it, and I was like, "Yeah, hey, you should do it. We desperately need a man. There's not many."
What's it been like making that switch then from screen to theatre?
Need to project. Project your voice.
It's been very, very cool, but it's this really, really funny thing, because Faith is the director. As she's told me many times, she's like, "Blocking is just something you can figure out. You don't have to. It's not set in stone. You can do it whenever you like, how you like." Which is funny, because in film, it's completely the opposite. It's like, you hit your mark, you're where you need to be at all times for this reason, and there's a very valid reason behind it. So it was definitely like both freeing and nerve-wracking, having more freedom with the blocking and things around that, which has been quite nice. But it's the first foray into theatre since high school, so I'm very much looking forward to it, and very much looking forward to doing more of it. And don't get me wrong, I still love film, and I'm always going to be interested in film and doing film as well, but I'd definitely be more than happy to add a lot more theatre to that list.
Nice.
Too.
Yeah. Nice. I wouldn't scare you away.
Film would have done that by now.
True, yeah. You got
and did
skin.
We pull you to Auckland to live from the south, or was Auckland home and you ventured south for the film?
No. I'm from North Canterbury, from Christchurch originally, and made the journey to Wellington for film work. Film work was the driving factor there, and then one of my agents at the time, when I was living in Wellington, I was getting a couple of auditions and a couple of gigs popping up in Auckland and flying back and forth, which can be quite costly. And she was like, "Yeah, you should live here." Mm. I was like, "If you insist," because living situation was getting weird in Wellington anyway. So I was like, "Yeah, perfect timing. Something's telling me to make the move." And I made the move, but the move happened to be end of 2019, right before COVID.
Perfect timing. Well, welcome to Auckland.
Yeah, between that, the strikes, the recessions, we're just on a winning streak.
Excellent. Well, now time for some magic. The magic of theatre.
Surely.
So, Casey, what about you? When did the arts world kick off for you?
Actually, very early, because I grew up in a small town called Inglewood, which is in Taranaki.
Mm. Everyone knows
Inglewood for certain reasons that we won't go into.
Oh, okay.
And my mum was a huge into, it's called the Q Theatre down there, and so I trod the boards from I think about 6 or 7, and loved it, and did that all through high school, and then for some reason, I don't know, just dropped away. You know, you get into the working world and et cetera, et cetera. I actually got into the dark art of data analytics. So completely went the other way from, you know, well, it's creative in its own way. And so I think it was in about 2014 or 15, around about then. And I was like, I really want to do a put at our film festival. So I joined up with some people I know doing it. And then I was like, oh my God, I love doing this. I was acting, I was doing set design, and I was like, okay, well, what else can I do? So I started writing, and then I've just produced and directed my first 2 short films, and now I'm getting back into theatre. So it's so just cool. I've just sort of started that creative journey again, and just really loving it.
You know, take anything back to Inglewood? Direct something and take it down, you know, touring show?
I was just about to say no, but I am working on a Christmas movie.
Ooh.
Oh.
That I'm thinking that I could set in Inglewood, and it's about a theatre.
Ooh.
So, yeah, watch this space.
Watch the space. Brilliant.
Road trip.
Yeah. All right, heading back to our two writers now to sort of chat a little bit more about the shows itself coming up. So, starting with you, Jeff, Shark in a Boat, who do you think it appeals most to? Who's going to enjoy this?
That's a really interesting question, Stephen, because one of the reasons I picked this whole thing and well, there's a fishing community that I'm really hoping will come along. And I know that because my family, my brother John is a big game fisherman and the family, I'm the worst fisherman in the family. But I'm hoping that they seem to be interested in coming along to watch this for the first time. So I was wanting to bring in a different group of people. And the two great hobbies in this country, the gardening is number one in this country as a hobby. Fishing is number two. It's a big deal for people in this country, fishing. I think because it's basically a thriller, the general theatre audience will be interested in it. It's short. It's from the minute they get on that boat, it's one hell of a ride, and you don't know what the hell's going to happen or if they're going to make it off. So you've got your general theatre audience, but the target was I never like to repeat myself or go back and do something I've done before. So, yeah, so this was something completely new. And so general theatre, to answer your question, general theatre audience and maybe a more generic Kiwi audience who don't go to theatre.
Yeah, that's cool in itself. And again, appeals to your local market there. I mean, I guess all you need is your fishermen to play rugby and you've got New Zealand sorted. Gardening, fishing, a bit of rugby, we're done.
Well, I forgot to mention rugby at all in the play.
Oh, we have it in the play.
Okay. So who does yours appeal to, do you think?
Interesting. Because the thing is, I've been, you know, religiously checking the ticket sales. And there's, because I thought, oh, I don't know if the North Shore old people are going to like it. But we're actually selling a lot of tickets to people over 65.
They won't if they hear you. Cool.
And I'm...
And they are our biggest listeners. Mine are.
Oh, God.
Love you all in the villages. Pour another sherry.
Yeah. Well, I saw that because I was thinking, I was like, we got the option for student tickets, seniors tickets, they're selling better than students tickets.
That's cool.
I'm like, okay, this might appeal to them. Wait until they hear the language in it. But the thing is,
that's the pump house, though. The pump house pulls that community really
does,
well, and people
yeah.
trust it. And it's a bit like what we're saying about Pitt Street. It's another venue, pump house. Is great on the shore that the locals do support it and they trust what goes into that space. Don't let them down, Faye.
I won't. It's got a lot of swearing and blasphemy and stuff that I won't go into, but yeah.
That's right. You've given them a warning now.
I did, yeah.
So,
but it's very tasteful.
What do you want them to take away from it? I love it. She says tasteful and her cast are leaving. They're actually walking out the studio. They're gone.
Bye.
What do you want the audience to take away from it, Faith?
I want them to kind of... Because you know how a lot of people would say things like, oh, why does everything have gay characters in it? Oh, everything has to be woke these days. You know, just because it's got like a gay person in it. That doesn't exactly make it quote-unquote woke. It's like, maybe they'll see that, you know, I'm not forcing the diversity into it. I'm not saying, oh, let's have gay people in it so we can get bums on seats so everyone's going to think we're really progressive and trying to keep up with the trends or whatever. Because it's not, you know, it's very, I wouldn't say it's too woke or too PC because, as I said, there's some very strong language in it. It's got some very heavy topics in it. As I said, it does challenge, it challenges... you know, religious guilt among queer people. It's, you know, there's the characters, they do talk about whether they feel gay enough or like they have to put on this act so they can look straight or whatever. So it's not just, oh, hey guys, let's shove some rainbow propaganda down everyone's throats. You know, I do want the older and more, you know, less progressive audiences to see that, you know, just because it's got queer people in it doesn't mean that we're trying to shove this political agenda down your throat. Because the thing is, it's not. I mean, the title, it's a political reference. Oh, it's pretty legal. But it's not exactly a political play. It takes place during a very significant moment in New Zealand politics. But it's not pushing any political agenda. So I think anyone, no matter what their views are, they would enjoy it.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to ask an actor that same question then, Liam.
Yes.
What would you like audiences to take away from it? Just curious.
Yeah, I
definitely the mic.
No, it's angled. I think above anything else, like sort of Faith is saying, aside from any, well, separating any agendas or anything from it, there is none of that adhering to it. I think more than anything, it's about enjoying the slice of life that we get to see occurring in the duration of the show, and that's what really will grab people, I think, with it more than anything. It sort of ends up stripping away all these like surface level features that Faith was just talking about, because you get so engrossed in the character and you get so engrossed in their own struggles and the tensions that occur because of that. And I think that's the thing that will really hold people long after they've finished watching it.
Nice. Okay. Joseph, if I put the secret hidden camera and microphone from Kick Arts in the foyer of Pitt Street Theatre,
do we get one?
What do you hope? Oh, it's too risky for you. What do you You're hope wrong. Audiences are saying as they leave?
I hope that they're saying that they had a great time. There's an ugly little undercurrent that theatre is boring. And anyone who actually works in theater knows that that's absolutely untrue. I spent a good chunk of my career with Shakespeare companies. And there's this feeling, even when I'm going to do press interviews, where interviewers would start with, now, we all know that Shakespeare is boring. Mm. No, we don't. And you get a group of audience members who are literally unprompted cheering for Henry V and who are, you know, gasping. When Hamlet's mother is poisoned, because they didn't know that it was going to happen. Our objective for this one is it should be a rollicking good thriller in the way that only live theater can be.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it. All right. Time for the plugs now. Faith, where can people get tickets, find out more, all of that important stuff?
On the Pump House's website, just go to the What's On section, look for it. The poster that's got some very happy couples with a very happy ending and happy life. Definitely not misleading at all. You might cry. Bring a box of tissues.
And what are the dates?
I love how I just think about that for a second. February 19 to 22nd, so this month.
Brilliant. Head to pumphouse.co.nz. All the dates, times and tickets are available there. Jeff, what about your team? Where can we get tickets?
Shark in a Boat is, you can get tickets through iTicket. We open at Pitt Street February the 27th, go through to the 8th of March. And then we are at the Rose Centre in Belmont on the North Shore, still through iTicket, from the 11th to the 14th.
Fantastic.
I forgot to add something.
$5 extra tonight.
We have a discount code. It's YANA in all caps, one word, because it's one word to us, YANA. And also on the 20th, we do have a pay what you can night if you're a little bit tight on money. So, yeah, tickets are from $10. Yeah, I'll shut up now.
Awesome. No, thank you, guys. We appreciate you coming in on a Sunday night. Good luck with both your seasons. It is a very busy theatre time, so listeners, get out and support. You might need to support a bit extra in February and March. There's so much on, then you can sort of save up your dollars for the next round because it's a busy time. Thank you so much, and thank you, Jeff, for all the work you do out in the arts world, providing us venues that we can use like this. You are so supportive.
We'll
be in touch.
I just
love it.
Oh, yep. Thank you, Stephen. It's been a lovely, lovely time. Thank you.
Take care, team. All right, we're going to catch up with Emma now on the other side of the world. What's happening, Emma?
Hey, Stephen. I'm currently in my room at Edison Hotel here in New York City. The Edison is literally on the top of 47th, right next to Times Square. So it's pretty exciting. We walk out the door and all the theatres are there. But anyway, I'm joined now by two of our Kiwi All-Stars from Travel Gang's Kiwi All-Stars. So let's welcome Georgia and Emma.
Hello.
So, first of all, Georgia, tell us whereabouts are you from in Aotearoa?
So, I live on the North Shore and I'm from Long Bay.
Fantastic. And Emma, what about you?
I am also based on the North Shore and I live in Red Beach.
Fabulous. So, first of all, for our listeners, Georgia, do you want to tell them what is Travel Gang's Kiwi All-Stars?
So, the Kiwi All-Stars are a group of audition students who come and perform on adjudication that's rehearsed in New York City.
And Emma, whereabouts is this adjudication performed?
We perform it at Sacramento in JTF West.
Okay, cool. So, that leads to the next question then. What is JTF even, Georgia?
So Junior Theatre Festival is a festival where students from across the country, and in this case across the world, come together to perform different adjudications.
And who, what kind of people were there to adjudicate you? Do you know, Emma?
Broadway stars and directors and all that jazz.
So, Georgia, what's the adjudication that you're doing?
So our adjudication is Beetlejuice Junior.
And is there any reason that this might be pretty exciting that it's Beetlejuice?
Well, Beetlejuice Junior isn't actually available in New Zealand at the moment.
So today you've had your first days in the studio. Who are you working with on this adjudication piece?
Well, our director is Dr. Shane Branson from Australia.
Our musical director is Rob Rakiki, who is based in New York, and he was the writer of The Lightning.
And our choreographer?
We're working with Scotty Morris.
And Scotty comes from Australia originally, but has been working out here for the last couple of years. So it's pretty cool. We've got two Australians and Rob, which is fantastic. So tell us, what was your first day in the studio like?
It was amazing. We had our casting today, and it was such a supportive environment in the room.
What's the scariest thing about day one, do you think, in the studio, Emma?
I think definitely auditioning and working with people that we've only met like 2 days ago. Yeah, it's quite a scary experience.
So where are the people from as part of this tour?
So the students that are on this tour come from all across Aotearoa. We have students coming from the South Island, the North Island, everywhere, from different companies, and yeah.
And how did you get to audition, Emma?
We attended Junior Theatre Festival New Zealand, and our group teacher nominated us to audition.
Cool. And the auditions were obviously with Travel Gang from Australia. Was that a scary experience, Georgia?
It was brand new to me. It was probably my first big audition that I've been a part of. But all the mentors and tutors were all so welcoming, and it was really fun, yeah.
Fantastic. And when did those auditions take place?
They took place in Junior Theatre Festival 2023.
So that meant that you had a lot of time to think about it and prepare. Yeah. What was the biggest thing you had to do to prepare to be here?
Fundraising.
Okay, it was an unanimous fundraising call out there. So tell us about your fundraising. What have you done?
Heaps of sausage sizzles and heaps of raffles. We sold Cookie Time cookies.
And I've attended so many markets to sell my grandmother's snoods and scarves.
And, of course, both of you got part-time jobs while you were at school, yes. So that you had your own personal spending money, right?
Yep, we did.
So, tracking back a little bit, why is musical theatre important to you, Georgia?
Well, it's always been a special thing in my life, because it allows me to kind of find my people and be in a space where I can just embrace everything that I love about theatre and creating magic on stage.
And when did you this journey start for you? When did you start performing?
I started performing at such a young age. I think I was 4, and I attended a local community theatre called Centre Stage in Orewa. And there I took classes, and I began my shows, and I actually started with Emma. So, yeah.
And why do you do music theatre, Emma?
Well, I started off as a very shy little girl. Getting into it, I gained a lot of confidence. And, yeah, I'm just able to speak so freely now and just do my own thing. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you see, like, I have a really vivid memory of the two of you. These two, how many years was ago was Lion King? Like about 6 or 7 years ago? These guys at Centre Stage and Junior's production of The Lion King Junior were Timon and Pumbaa, and they were hilarious, and they're still such good friends now.
That is such a cool memory of ours. We still call each other our Timon and Pumbaa.
Really cute. Are you seeing any shows while you're over here?
Yes. We're seeing heaps. We saw The Outsiders yesterday.
We both cried the whole time.
Yes. I'm bawling my eyes out in second act. I'm going to see Moulin Rouge tonight.
I'm going to see Six tonight. So yeah. We've got lots of shows booked, and I was so excited because sitting in the audience and watching a Broadway show for the first time is such a surreal and magical experience.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome to see that sort of thing and just imagine what we might get up to in the future. Yeah.
So this is a hard question for you. Who would be your, like, you walk into Junior Theatre West and there's a Broadway star there. Who would it be that you would want to be standing there or to be in the lift in Sacramento? Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, yeah.
She's my favourite.
She's your favourite.
Not you.
I actually don't know. There's too many to choose from.
Too many to choose from?
I have no idea. I probably anybody famous, anybody well known. I'd fangirl anyway.
See, for me, I think it would be like a famous composer. Someone like Stephen Schwartz, of course, would be amazing. So, you know, the writer of Wicked, especially at the moment. Or imagine if Ariana Grande was there. What would you do?
Okay, Ariana Grande was there. I think I'd cry. I might hold her hand.
I don't think I'd be able to.
Everything would leave my mind.
That is so cool. All right. So how much longer are we here for? We're in New York for?
We're in New York for four days. Yeah. And then we head to San Francisco on our way to Sacramento to attend the festival.
And then we go
to LA.
Disneyland.
And we're attending a Broadway workshop there.
Really cool. All right. Well, I'm going to let these girls get ready for their show now. All the best, girls, for the rest of the trip.
Thank you.
And these guys are actually doing a takeover on the Junior Theatre Festival New Zealand page while we're at the festival. So that's Friday, Saturday and Sunday. For you in New Zealand, that will be Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So if you jump onto the juniortheatrefestival.nz Instagram page, you'll be able to follow along everything that happens at the festival.
Woo, exciting!
So, Stephen, as you could hear from the speed that those girls were talking, they're pretty excited to be here in America in this amazing trip. The rest of the kids, too, are all doing fantastically, and it's so joyful to see them gaining these new friendships and becoming so well connected to each other, and I'm sure they will be making huge memories to bring back to New Zealand. So I just want to say thanks, Stephen, for holding the fort. I'll be checking in again on Kick Arts next week to tell you how the festival's going and maybe a little bit about the shows I've seen while I'm here. So thanks, Stephen and team, and remember, I'm going to say it even though it's not the end of the show,
Thanks, Emma. Thanks for pre-recording that. We really appreciate it. With the time difference, great to hear they're having such an amazing time. Now, Eric, have you caught your breath back after our very full studio of loud guests? I don't think I've ever heard the studio talk so loud there all at once.
No, it's never been so busy.
That was quite something. That was quite something. But we've calmed down now. We've got some wonderful folks that have just had a fabulous day of rehearsals in to chat to us about Oleana, Nick Brown. Welcome back.
Kia ora, Stephen. Kia ora, Eric. Thank you for having us.
Great to have you back. And this is a little bit different because often we're in here talking school shows and things.
We are.
But this is something completely different. Tell us a little bit about this show and the fabulous people you brought along.
A real tangent, because I'm rehearsing Mamma Mia at school at the moment with a cast of 90, and then I go to rehearsals with just the wonderful Amy and Stephen here. So I'm directing Oleana, which is a fantastic play by David Mamet, who you'll know for Speed the Plough, Glengarry Glen Ross, The Untouchables movie, fantastic script. And it was written in 1992, and it's all about power and gender dynamics and in the post-Me Too movement and where we find ourselves in a kind of a Trumpian universe is very much a play for the times.
Okay. That was kind of a sneaky segue in there. and who are these fabulous people you've brought, and who do they play?
To my right is Amy Cotter, a graduate of the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, a very fantastic school in the UK. Bless her.
Kilda,
and Amy plays Carol, the student. And then I think he's called Stephen Butterworth. No, I know Stephen well. My good friend Stephen Butterworth, one of New Zealand's finest. He's playing the university professor, John. And the play is just a two-hander. It's 85 minutes long, and it just traces the journey of their functional and then dysfunctional relationship as things spiral out of control.
All right, Amy, tell us all about Carol. I love it how he introduced you, though, with this beautiful, prim voice, and then went, Carol.
Carol.
So tell us all about Carol.
Butchered the name.
Thank you. I've done my job.
No, as is well from one Brit to another. Thank you for having me. So,
great.
Yeah, so
here.
I play Carol, who is a student who's basically struggling. She, you know, she's worked her butt off to get into this incredible university, and doesn't have the best relationship with education system as it is anyway, and has a kind of a lot to say about it, and we unpack that throughout the three very intense, very fast moving, thrilling acts of Oliana. I'm learning more and more about her and feeling more and more connected to her, and I'm sure Stephen you get that. And today was a very playful rehearsal, and I think off the back of that we're feeling even more excited.
And a little more confident as we go.
Yeah,
two-handers are pretty hard, you know.
Yeah.
Let alone a three-act two-hander.
That's right.
Four.
With no interval.
So tell us about John.
John, well, I remember seeing this play, let me start there, as I saw it back in 1988 at 88 at the Sydney Theatre Company, and I think Genevieve Pico was in it. And I went along alone, like by myself, but I've always been interested in theatre. I've been, I was Little Boy Blue when I was 3 years old, and I remember I ran through a window and I cut my wrist and it bled. Obviously, it cut my main artery, and luckily a nurse, I'm gone off the track, but a nurse from next door, she ran over and held my wrist above the sink, and I went straight to hospital. The only reason why this happened was because I was excited to play Little Boy Blue on that Saturday afternoon, and I remember I got my wrist all strapped up straight after the hospital. I went to the church place in Birkenhead, and I played and blew my horn, as because he blows his horn, doesn't he?
Does.
That Little Boy Blue, come blow my horn. I mean, that sounds rude, but
after 8:30,
I was six or something. And then I held the horn with my other hand, and I remember how significant that was. But what I learned from that was that the show must go on. And, so I learned at a very early age. And that was in Birkenhead. So the Pump House, which is where I'm segueing.
Beautiful.
The Pump House is where I'm actually returning after 40 something years, because I started at the Pump House. I was at Birkenhead College and I started in amateur theatre with Seven Brides, with Seven Brothers. I have done more just to pray-see this really quickly and randomly. I have done probably more theatre productions in this country for someone my age than anyone else in the country, because I have been working for so long, and I've done many plays twice, so I think when you add them all up, I might have done something like 80 productions, professional productions in this country.
Mm. I remember I saw you at Tipo when I first arrived in this country, because I moved over here, 2022, moved back, and I remember seeing you in a show and then
I was
feeling so excited to
I was playing a white person as a brown in a brown play, even though I'm often playing a brown person in a white play. So I think that was quite challenging for that reason alone. I had to pretend I didn't know how to speak Māori.
You're playing this opposite. Pākehā great not gravedigger, but you were the sort of janitor.
Yeah, I was the kaitiaki of it, kind of looking after it.
Of the urapā.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a beautiful play.
Oh, thank you. You've never mentioned
that. Have I never mentioned that? Well, there you go. It's the moment. I've never
mentioned it now.
We send them off for dinner and a few wines.
Now we're
What is it about Oliana then that attracted you to audition for this one?
Well, the play itself is hugely significant to me because I saw it back in the 80s and thought, oh my God, this is really, it's like an eruption, because you, in the first act, you understand the relationship because you have a professor and she is failing and she wants to understand more about the education and what's happening in her educational life. And then in the second act, it becomes a real balance of power in there, and especially with the gender politics and with the time in which it was written, it becomes a real like a, it's fireworks of language. And when you look at David Mamet, who is a really significant writer, who was Chicago born, 1947, the language itself is epic.
It's thrilling.
It's really thrilling.
It's constant as well, though. It's exhausting in a beautiful way. Like, it's the back and forth between the two of them is constant, and they think so quickly. And I think that's, you know, David Mamet's writing.
That's
it's
what
just
was exciting.
Full throttle. Explosive. The whole thing. Completely. And pithy and
funny.
Exciting and very
and
funny.
And
yeah.
Funny. The dialogue overlaps in such a way. The dramaturgy, the internal mechanics of how the texts work are fascinating when you look at the words on the page. It's unlike anything you've ever looked at before. And you've got to remember Arthur Miller, Sam Shepard.
That's right.
Tony Kushner. You know, that's the kind of... When you talk about David Mamet, those are the kind of people that you would reference as well. Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross.
It's the American
Pulitzer
great.
Prize.
So it's challenging for an audience because you're not only learning a whole new vernacular of you know, and of ideas and concepts, you're learning new words and it's challenging. But I think people should rise to the challenge. There's so often now arts are a lot of comedy and, you know,
can be
quite
buffoonery
and a little bit. Yeah, I mean, yes, we need to laugh in that kind of way as well. I'm not saying it's not useful, but
we need to be confronted.
We need to be confronted and challenged,
and
that's what I miss about going to see things is that the concepts aren't rich enough, or there's nothing, there's no deeper layer to things. It's so surprising, that's what I love about it when you walk away arguing about what you thought that play was about, or it's a different opinion to the person you came with. I just finished doing a play playing
House. You played Torvald in A Doll's House Part 2. Glad I came to see it.
Yes.
well,
it's great. Thank you.
Well.
Yeah, that's great. But that play also, a really intelligent play, beautifully written, based on the old, you know, back in 1880s, who wrote it?
Ibsen.
Henrik Ibsen. I mean, these are intelligent plays. I'm sorry, it's just that the thing is, you don't see these plays very often, and I think seeing not only these classic plays or with a modern twist or with a modern arena, that's what theatre for me is about. To think. I mean, we don't think about these things anymore, and I think that's sad.
I love a show where the audience at the end is silent. Because they just need to process everything they say.
Well, they might be arguing. We're not sure. It's such I think it's going to be quite polarizing. And that's really exciting.
I love it when you come out and they don't know you're the actor who's just got undressed or whatever, and you're walking back to your car and you hear the comments, but they're the true comments because they don't know that this walking
during
behind
the, during the great period of realism and naturalism at the turn of the 20th century, plays like A Doll's House and also Miss Julie by Strindberg, they did provoke conversations. Violent conversations after they went down. And Oleana is maybe a throwback to that, because in the original London production, the Broadway and the Sydney Theatre Company production, there were arguments afterwards. Often female-identifying members of the public would identify with Carol, and male-identifying would actually identify with John. And then you often have spouses actually arguing over, because they're both flawed and they both have righteousness. And you have to work out who is in the right, if that is possible. I mean, our tagline is, you know, whatever side you take, you're wrong. Because it's just incredibly complex.
And that's also down to the directing, isn't it? And because what we've done, what you've done, Nick, with this, is you've been so... you know, you're not telling anyone anything.
No.
You're just merely laying the stage for it, really, you know, setting the scene.
I keep talking about
then,
the breadcrumbs. We've got to leave the breadcrumbs. For this moment, the breadcrumbs lead back to that antecedent that means that this moment can actually occur and flourish. And that then may lead to this. So we have to leave a certain degree of vagary. It's a very interesting process.
It's a funny line to kind of teeter on, isn't it?
And look, I mean, you're used to directing these large-scale musicals. You know, what is it like switching that brain to just having two people, two very experienced people in front of you? For a start, do you stand there and go, oh, hang on, everyone's here, we can start?
That's a really good point.
Stephen's late.
It's a very different experience. We are a trio of partners, and there is no blocking, there is no prescriptiveness, there are thoughts and suggestions and offers. And then we collaborate with each other, and I could throw something into the arena and Amy could say, that's good, and Stephen goes, that's good, but only if Amy, and Amy then might say, that's good too. And so there's this constant synergy that's going on between us. So... whereas in a student context, you might have to be a bit more prescriptive, not in a dogmatic or kind of controlling way. But in this space, your job as director is to create a really wholesome aesthetic space, have a sense of what you want to do, and to hold on to it lightly. So those people that come into the room go, oh, but actually, I thought this. And you go, okay, cool. We'll play with that as well. And play is probably at the center of what we've been doing.
Yeah, and you've mentioned that a few times. That's really cool. Now, as I hand out the vitamins to everyone in the room, you know, a cast of two, where do you go? Do you have alternates? Do you have understudies? Or is it just they cannot get sick?
This is it.
Bubble wrap them.
This is it.
Yeah, cool. So is it a pressure on you guys?
Well, I tell you what, back in 1940s in Chicago, where he was born, they would probably shoot the actor if they actually believed them, right? So, and that's what did happen quite often in Chicago. They would kill or stand up and shoot the person who was playing somebody they didn't like because they weren't quite familiar with that idea of playing a character. And so, shamefully, actors would die. Now, I don't think people are going to stand up and shoot us in the pump house.
They might throw bread. Who knows?
But that whole idea within this, with him, especially his type of acting, because William H. Macy, he played the role that I'm playing in the movie, and he talks a lot about how you have to play him with absolute real, a kind of realness, not a, you don't act it. You just have to be as truthful to what you're saying.
I remember a teacher at drama school said, you can't judge the character. It's you. You can't judge them. So I can't sit here and say, oh, Carol was wrong or she was right. You know, it's just the way I act in the, it's just in the moment, this is the decision they make. And one of my favorite directors is called Robert Icke, who's brilliant, does lots of classical Oedipus and Medea and did an amazing Oristia in London. And he always said, there's no villains and there's no heroes. It's purely just people behaving in the way that they feel they must at that moment. And as actors and characters, that's what we're doing. That's all we're doing. We're making a decision and we're going with it. It might work, might not. That's all they're doing.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a short music break. Then after the break, these fabulous two are going to give us a little moment from the show itself, and then we'll unpack their arts journey. Now, Eric, festival coming up. What is it?
Laneway. Mm-hmm.
See, I'm the old man in the room. You're the young one. So Laneway's coming up, and a big act at this event is
Charlie XCX.
And what is so special about Charlie XCX?
It was a bit of a thing. The summer, the Brat summer.
The Brat summer?
Yeah, but now it's Brat summer in New Zealand.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a listen to their track. It's called Apple. Charlie XCX Apple. Are you heading to Laneways, Eric?
Yes.
You are?
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Is this one of the headlines you're looking forward to? Who
yeah,
else
I think
is on?
So. And there's also Claro, and there's lots of other people. Kiwi Vera Allen.
Brilliant.
She's on, yeah.
And this is the festival that's had a lot of rain the last few years, isn't it? We're hoping for fine
weather
yeah. this time,
but
yeah.
But this is my first time living in Tamaki Makaurau, so I get to come.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Awesome. All right. Well, we'll chat to you more about that after the event. All right. Back to our fabulous guests now. Now, no pressure, but they're going to portray a moment from the show. Is this? Does this need a leader, Nick, on where in the performance it's in?
Yeah, sure. So, as the guys have been saying, it's a three-act play, but the acts are quite short, so it's only 85 minutes without an interval. Act one kind of belongs to John, and he's kind of dominating. He's a bit of a show-off as a teacher. And then in act two, we find a degree of parity. There's a kind of an equity, a balance occurs. And then something happens towards the end of act two that gives us act three, which is the explosion. So they're going to give you a little bit from act two when Ooh. Things are in parity and maybe moving towards moving towards that explosion.
Brilliant. All right, take it away, team.
Do you know that I tried to help you?
What I know, I have reported.
I would like to help you now. I would. Before this escalates.
You see, I don't think that I need your help. I don't think I need anything you have.
I feel...
I don't care what you feel. Do you see? Do you see? You can't do that anymore. You do not have the power. Did you misuse it? Someone did. Are you part of that group? Yes. Yes, you are. You've done these things. And to say, oh, let me help you with your problem?
Yes, I understand. I understand. You're hurt. You're angry. Yes, I think your anger is betraying you down a path which helps no one.
I don't care what you think.
You don't? But you talk of rights. Don't you see? I have rights, too. Do you see? I have a house, a part of the real world, and the tenure committee... Good men and true.
Professor.
No, please. Also, part of that world, you understand, this is my life. I'm not a bogeyman. I don't stand for something I...
Professor! I came here as a favor. At your personal request. Perhaps I should not have done so. But I did. On my behalf and on behalf of my group. And you speak of the tenure committee, one of whose members is a woman, as you know. And though you may call it good fun, or an historical phrase, or an oversight, or all of the above, to refer to the committee as good men and true is a demeaning remark. It is a sexist remark, and to overlook it is countenance continuation of that method of thought. It is a remark...
Oh, come on, come on! Sufficient to deprive a family of...
Sufficient? Sufficient. Sufficient. Yes, it is a fact. And that story, which I quote, is vile and classist and manipulative and pornographic.
It's pornographic?
What gives you the right, yes, to speak to a woman in your private... Yes, yes. I'm sorry. You feel yourself empowered. You say so yourself. To strut, to posture, to perform, to call me in here, eh? You say that higher education is a joke, and you treat it as such. You treat it as such and confess to a taste to play the patriarch in your class, to grant this, to deny that, to embrace your students.
How can you assert? How can you stand there and...
How can you deny it?
Oh, beautiful work. Especially at the end of a full day of rehearsals. And it's, you know, 9:10.
The rest.
Oh, but what a great hook. Nice choice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of... I'm of a certain age now, and I keep thinking of Peter Hall, the founding director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I remember him saying in his late 60s, early 70s, he didn't count how many years he might have left. He counted how many plays he had to produce and direct. Mm-hmm. I've got one more Doll's House in me. I've got one more Guys and Dolls, maybe. I've got one. He wanted to work with great material, and I'm conscious that because I don't get enough time to do the material always that I would love to do. I love the work that I do at Westlake. I have a really great job. But this is a really important play. it's timely with Trump and Me Too and also with cancel culture. This is a play that I choose to work with on, with these fine people at this moment, and
it's
I think it's very popular.
A lot of people I say that I'm doing Oleana, they say, oh, who's your Carol? You know, they a lot of people actually know this play because it was so significant at the time of, you know, of in the early 90s.
I think it's going to be hard to watch. Interestingly, you know, it's going to be one of those
which
ones
which will be hopefully a good thing.
Absolutely, in the best way. It's going to be so confronting.
I remember seeing Cabaret at the Donmar Warehouse, directed by Sam Mendes, and at the very end, Alan Cumming, who played the MC. The musical had kind of finished, but there was a little kind of epilogue, and he stood there and he was being very coquettish and he was flirting with the audience, had a big great coat on, and he would show a little bit of shoulder, and then in 1 minute, with a stark downlight, he dropped the great coat and he had the pajamas that you would have worn at Auschwitz, and then it went to black, and that was it. And I remember sitting there thinking, that was really profound. I don't want to be here. I'm glad I'm here.
This play
has a similar quality. I don't want to be here, but I'm glad I've seen it. It's a really fascinating tension.
Nice. So, Stephen, you mentioned, you know, starting back as the little blue boy and Birkenhead and, and your many years in Pump House. When you look back into your arts journey, what are the moments that have stood out for you so far?
I'm a big fan now of Tom Stoppard's work. I've done three of his plays for Auckland Theatre Company and various other companies. But the musicals for me, I there was an opportunity where I could have stayed in Australia and done musical after musical, and I did West Side Story with the Royal Shakespeare director of Ian Judge, and I at that time I felt that there was I was like a bit like a performing monkey. I sang, danced, and did all that. And the main thing I got from it was to look at one person and those thousands of people each time they turned up at the Victorian Arts Centre and think they've never seen this before. They're crying, and I need to do this for that one person so that I didn't turn into something mechanical, which was one note I think Ian Judge gave me. He just said, look out, just don't become mechanical. And I think that is the one thing when you're doing eight musicals after 6 months or a year. But I thought to myself the one thing mostly that, so that was a real highlight for me. I was working at my peak in my mid-20s, but I missed the culture. So I came back to New Zealand and I wanted to do more New Zealand plays. So I did a lot of New Zealand musicals. Brain Dead, the musical, with Fiona McDonald, and I travelled with Waiora into Hawaii and things. And I been down and cried. I did The Secret Garden. So musicals for me are my forte, but I now had an opportunity to do the Shakespeare's at the Pop-Up Globe, so I was a part of a lot of those Shakespeare's, and I think I'm the only Māori fella who's ever played Richard III professionally in this country, and I think that's quite a big deal. So Shakespeare, and I teach Shakespeare now, so it's something I am passionate about, and I love it. You know, I watched this accident outside my house yesterday, and I had to call 111 because the fight, there was a fight immediately after, right? And there was, so they were assaulting each other. So I immediately thought of Shakespeare because Shakespeare, which I, strangely enough, he knows how to put the behavior into a language. And if you knew what you were feeling and you could put it into a language, you wouldn't just throw your fist around like they were, that, because all they could say were expletives and yell at and scream at each other. But I find it really a benefit for any young child that knows what they're actually feeling to put that into words. And if you can do that, then you're going to avoid prison. So I think that is basically as simple as that. If you can actually articulate yourself in a way on how you are feeling, then you won't lash out. And I think that's because I work at a school out in South Auckland now, because I actually worked at Westlake, and that was a Decile 10 and St. Cuthbert's and Dio, different issues. Now I work at James Cook High School, and they are a Decile 1, I see they fight every day, and there's all sorts. Most of their parents are in prison. So you just have to kind of, I'm trying to bring Shakespeare into their lives, and I think that has been my new thing I'm finding, is that I'm bringing that articulation to their behaviour.
Brilliant. Love it. Mm. Oh, Amy, you got to top that. Take us back. What's your arts journey?
Such important work.
It is.
Because it's such a, it's been a joy to work with you. Anyway. To be honest, first kicked it off, I was an athlete. That was my thing. And I was like, I was a runner. I was a very keen runner. And I was like, the Olympics. And all my teachers were like, we got the Olympics and all this. And then I kind of sort of put my hand up for a play, and I was in primary school, and they said, who can do an Irish accent? And I went, I don't know, give it a go. And then I kind of just played this hilarious, it was a musical version of Cinderella Jones. And I played Patty O'Doors, so this Irish fairy godmother. And I was doing this sort of crazy Irish character, 12, and people were like, oh my god, and they kept going out to my mum, oh my god, have you seen it yet? My mum's like, what on earth did you do? Were you awful? What happened? Did you embarrass yourself? And everyone's like, no, Amy was like, mate, and it was fun. I was like, oh my god, this is fun. This is what I need. I was that kid with all the energy, and so I was pushed into sport, and that was my focus. And then I could feel and not kind of get in trouble for feeling and moving around and playing. And so my first professional show was Hampstead Theatre, and I played Gorbachev's granddaughter, and it was Ksenia, her name was. And Julian Glover and Isla Blair played my grandparents, mm-hmm. who obviously are incredible British, greats. And obviously they're a couple in real life. Mm-hmm. And that was two months in Hampstead Theatre stage, and that was just like, oh my gosh, I can do this as a thing. And then obviously ended up at Central across the road, a few years later, and kind of just carried on and brought myself back to New Zealand, and mainly to kind of get better at screen, because I'd done so much theatre was my thing. And then being here, it's kind of focused on screen. And I'm jumping into the classic sort of first job is Shortland Street, which is amazing and hilarious, and I'm very proud. it's just I've only done one other play here so far, and it was at the Howick, and it was the Canadian again. I love accents. I absolutely love it.
I can tell. That's great.
And so it was a Canadian, these sort of like crazy Canadian characters, and now I'm doing an American, which is awesome. And
musicals in your life?
Hopefully, yeah. I did Into the Woods. Into the Woods, and I played the sort of slightly unhinged one of the stepsisters, Lucinda. In Into the Woods. I try to. I don't really get. There's not that many musicals going. I'm jumping onto a lovely little sort of preview of something called HR the Musical, which was written by a wonderful friend of mine.
We've had them in here many times for both of their shows.
So I'm going to do a little bit with them, and hopefully that will just get more and more, because I'm a spoken word poet. That's my kind of other life, and
something that musicals do, I think, when you hit a note or something that lift that emotional value and the vulnerability when someone sings, the vulnerability of that person just opens up like a rift, and I love that part.
I think
bypasses the filters or the barriers we might put up to protect ourselves from the world. I think music and musicals, they bypass those,
doesn't it?
Unknowingly.
Maybe that's an Olly Anna the musical in the making.
Oh,
maybe another collab.
An opera, maybe. I could see an opera. I'm not sure about a musical.
Awesome. Now, Nick, you're often in here with your school shows and things, and your fabulous daughter, Katie, who's heading overseas. What's your year looking like after this?
Oh, it's quite exciting, actually. So I have been given, very graciously, my school has given me a year off from the end of June. So I'm off to LA, New York, and London.
We won't talk to him anymore.
Okay.
I'm jealous.
And I'm going to be doing some directing in the drama schools. I'm going to go and do some acting, hopefully, in the pilot seasons in LA this time next year. So I have an agent set up for that. And I'm going to go, and I've got an agent for London to go and go back and do some musicals again. So we'll see, audition for The Dad in Mamma Mia or Mr. Banks those kind of things that I've done. So that'll be really interesting. So and hopefully I'll kind of run a little bit parallel to Katie and see what's going on with her. It's going to be a really interesting year. I'm really excited.
So is Mamma Mia before you leave?
No, sorry. That's the kind of thing. That's the hypothetical that I'm hopefully going to go and audition for.
Oh no! So when you get here.
Oh, sorry. Yes, my Mamma Mia. Yes,
your Mamma Mia. Do you stage that before you leave?
I do. So the season for that is April and May. At school. That's right. And then we're also doing a play as well, like we did last year. We did Musketeers and Crazy for You. So it's going to be a busy, and of course of this as well. So it's going to be a busy few months, but a very happy, joyous time. It's lovely working. somebody working. Yeah. Oh, it's such a privilege to work in the creative arts. The three of us were chatting tonight. Absolutely. We had a break.
Yeah.
And we all said it's just so lovely to play. We forget how to play. We go to primary school and a lot of play-based learning. They're still playing the intermediates. Mm. And as adults, we get further and further removed from play. And I think it's such a powerful tool for life.
It is. I was telling someone I got in trouble because I went and taught at the Teachers Training College a little while ago, and it was primary school teachers, and I was doing a drama applied theatre workshop, and this person went and sat in the corner, and I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "Oh, I don't do play." And I said, "Well, I'm going to talk to you as two levels here. Hat number one is your teacher. You really need to. This is not an option. Hat number two is a parent. Please don't teach in primary school." And she just looked me in the eye. Yeah. The lecturer in the corner went quiet, and I said, "I don't want kids not learning to play."
Yeah. I'm so pleased you said that, because I think as Kiwis we're non-confrontational. I think we avoided it. And I think actually sometimes the direct address about something, that's quite a troubling thing in a teacher.
It
you've
is.
Got to be open. You've got to be improvisatory in nature, and you've got to play.
And especially at primary. And I said, I'm a board chair. I'm two schools. I want people who are going to have fun with our kids. Right. Mm. There's enough serious stuff happening in this world to take play away.
It's also skills. It's people skills.
Yeah.
Playing. It's learning how to actually just be present and have fun. And it doesn't have to mean anything. It doesn't have to be right. It doesn't have to be wrong. It doesn't have to be perfect.
So
you're
important.
Simply just experimenting and being in a space with others. It's vital.
Now, we're nearly out of time. We're going to pop up two double passes. What is the competition? Now, heads up, this will go up tomorrow on our socials. What is the competition? What do they need to answer?
So as I said earlier on, David Mamet has written a number of plays and a number of great film movies as well, The Untouchables being one of them, but he's won the Pulitzer Prize. He's been nominated twice, but he's won the Pulitzer Prize for drama, which Hamilton has won, and many other great plays and musicals has won. But can your lovely audience listeners tell me, what play did he win the Pulitzer Prize for drama for? And for the first two people that get in, they'll get a double pass to the show each.
Brilliant. All right, we'll make sure that gets up in the next day or so. So if you're listening tonight, have a look at our socials. Nick, where can people go to get tickets and all that important stuff?
Indeed. So we're on at the Pump House Theatre in Takapuna, the Pump House. So you can go to thepumphouse.co.nz and you can click onto Oleana there and you can pick up your tickets there. And we run from March the 10th to the 15th and it kicks off at 8 p.m. And it's just it's in three acts, but it's a one-act play, so to speak. It lasts 85 minutes, so just slightly shorter than a Disney movie, but it is not a Disney movie.
Stephen, you mentioned the conversations you hear in the car park as you exit. If I place the hidden camera in the pump house for you with the microphone, what do you hope audiences might be saying as they leave?
I bet they'll say things like, "Weren't they good? Weren't they real? I almost thought that Stephen was American. I never knew that." And that's actually aside. Truthfully, I think I would like to hear them say something about, I didn't think he raped her, or just questioning about. Yeah, no, well, I did,
and when he said this.
I'd like to hear them arguing about it.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a fabulous season. Go well. Have an amazing year. Give that up to Katie. Thank you, Eric, for jumping into Emma Seaton, shuffling guests in and out tonight.
Yes,
for
good
us,
on you.
We will catch up with Emma again next week. If you've got something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Apologies, we are fully booked for right into nearly the middle of March, April now, so you need to get in early. Don't tell us about something coming up next week. Now, to close the show, we have the fabulous indie songwriter Michael Llewellyn unveiling his poetic new single, Down by the Packs. It was just released yesterday. Have a fabulous week and make sure you kick some arts. For you.
moon becomes land. Two cities troubled by chest full of sand. Saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some.